with Dr. Keith Suter.
Australia is hoping to reset its embattled trade relationship with China by joining the economic powerhouse and other Asian nations in the largest free trade deal ever signed. It's called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, and it was finalised yesterday. And it's going to grant Australian businesses greater access to 14 nations in the Indo-Pacific, including China, Japan, New Zealand, Indonesia, and Vietnam. The Trade Minister, Simon Birmingham, described the agreement as a huge accomplishment that would unify the trade rules of the participating nations, which have economies worth a combined $30 trillion. He said he hoped both countries, that is Australia and China, would be involved in the RCEP, and it would ease tensions between the two companies. The agreement signifies that our region, which has been the most economically dynamic region of the world in recent decades, is still committed to openness. That's what Australian politicians are saying. Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions joins me this afternoon. Hello, Keith.
Yes, good afternoon, Brent.
Keith, my first question to you is, this all sounds wonderful in the reports that have come out. Is it as lovely and wonderful as it sounds?
Well, the devil will be in the detail. So the argument from the Australian government, which has been involved in these 8 years of negotiations, is that it's going to be good news for the farmers. It increases the range of overseas markets that will be available for Australian farmers, and it'll also be good news for the providers of services. So that's like education or healthcare, aged care, etc. That's the theory. In essence, the whole issue of free trade, and it's an issue that goes back for at least 200 years, and it's one in which the economists get divided. On the one hand, there's the argument that if you open your markets up and you're able to get into other people's markets, then you can provide more employment opportunities for some people. The downside is that when the cheap foreign goods come into the country, then you destroy some of your own local manufacturing. So it's interesting, for example, that the free trade debate was not a major issue in American politics. It began, well, America has been a champion of free trade, certainly since the time of Bill Clinton, so that's almost 30 years ago. And it's an article of faith in the United States. Now, what has happened, of course, is that with the involvement of the United States in other free trade agreements, they're not involved with this one, but in other free trade agreements, what has happened is that you've had cheap goods coming into the United States, which help lower the rate of inflation, gives consumers greater choice of goods, but at the same time just destroys the American manufacturing sector because they can't compete against cheap foreign goods. And Donald Trump highlighted this 4 years ago in his election campaign. He said, look, to a lot of the people in the old traditional blue-collar Democrat areas, you have been betrayed by the politicians in Washington who signed up for all these free trade deals. Your jobs have gone to China or Mexico. And this, of course, helped get Trump to win, particularly in seats or areas that were traditionally Democratic. Now, it's interesting to note that Joe Biden has not covered this very much in his own election campaign. And so one interesting issue is, will we expect Joe Biden to be any more in favor of free trade than Donald Trump was? Because Biden can see what it did to destroy the Democrat Party in the industrial heartland of the United States. That's one issue. The second issue with this agreement is that it's an area that is now dominated by China. So India was involved with the negotiations but pulled out because they got concerned about what was going to happen to their own manufacturing sector. So the Indians pulled out last year. So this is a free trade area where easily the largest economy is China. You've also got other players like Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, but they're fairly small compared with China. So there'll be some people who are saying, look, this is further evidence of this new international economic order which is emerging, in which China is at the center. And as I say, the Americans are not included in this new agreement. So it is very much an Asian agreement. It begins, if you look at the geographical spread, it begins at the top of Asia, around China, South Korea, Japan, and works its way all the way down through Indonesia and the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. As you say, you've got Vietnam, you've got Cambodia, etc., and it works all the way down to Australia and New Zealand. And at the centre of it, you've got China. So this is the emerging new global order, which excludes the United States, and it revolves around China. So I can imagine that another source of concern for some people is the political impact of this free trade agreement, that we're really, again, coming under the purview of China and slowly moving away from the United States. So it's going to be a very controversial document when we get to see the full text of it. It will need to be tabled in Parliament, and so at that point, people will need to go over it, because obviously Parliament will need to adopt the appropriate legislation. But it's certainly, for me, one of the biggest news stories of the year. It won't attract much attention, because people, when they talk about free trade or whatever, their eyes glaze over. It's all too complicated. But in fact, it might cost them or their children a job, or at the same time, it might create employment opportunities for some Australians. So it is a really important issue, but it's not one that's going to get much coverage in the media, which I'm so glad that we're discussing it today, because at least as the years roll by, we'll be able to say, well, we were talking about that agreement right on the day that it was signed. So we'll be able to say, yes, we were doing our best to get people alert to the issue. It's got swings and roundabouts. You've got some people who will benefit from a free trade deal, and you're going to get others who are going to lose out. If you look back to when Australia began to get involved with free trade deals at the time of Whitlam and Fraser, on the one hand, for our older people, they will remember a time when if they went to out buy clothes, the clothes were all made in Australia, very limited range of clothes that were available, and at quite a high cost. And then with free trade, we started to bring in the cheap foreign clothing. That was excellent news for consumers. They had a wider range and a cheaper range, or they can go really upmarket and bring in really expensive clothes. But, of course, what we did was to destroy our own clothing industry. And that's the issue of swings and roundabouts. There are some who will benefit from this free trade deal. There are others going to lose their jobs.
Keith, we've talked about the bans that China are supposedly putting on Australian products in recent weeks. Is this going to make it more difficult for China to go through with these bans or not?
Theoretically, yes, because we'll be able to say to China, look, we're all part of this one big happy family. On the Regional Comprehensive Economic Program. Therefore, you should stop behaving. Now, what they're doing, the Chinese, of course, are trying to exclude trade from Australia on hygiene grounds. In other words, they claim they're finding insects inside the logs that came from Australia, for example. So this is a non-tariff barrier to trade. I'm sorry I'm getting complicated here, but a non-tariff barrier has got nothing to do with price. It's to do with things like, for example, the health of the product. Is it containing toxic items that you really don't want to have included in your country? And the argument from China, and we need to have all of this investigated, is that they're saying that some of the food we're supplying is impure. So that's another way in which you can try to delay things. That's why we need to have a very good referee that can do things objectively and go in and look, are there actually insects in the logs that have been sent to China from Australia? Or is this just political mischief-making by the Chinese?
Is the signing of this partnership going to mean that the relationships between the Chinese and the Australian politicians start to improve? Because from all reports, they look very fractured at the moment.
Absolutely. And of course, the argument has been that there's no one in China the Australian government could ring who's going to pick up the phone. So, obviously, we hope that's going to improve, which means it'll improve at the cost of our relationship with the United States. Because the Chinese are saying, you Australians are too close to the Americans. We want to sever that connection, and we want to bring you much more closely within our own zone of influence. This is why I say, you know, we're living at this turning point where traditionally we've been associated with the United States, and before that, the United Kingdom. And now we're beginning to move across and become more dominated by China. So we could improve our relations very quickly with China if we just stop criticizing the Chinese for their treatment of the Uyghurs in Tibet, or the way in which they're behaving in Hong Kong, or calling for international inquiries into the COVID virus, the Wuhan virus. We could improve our relations very quickly. It depends on whether or not Australia would like to go down that route of becoming more subservient to China.
Can we be associated with both the United States and China as we have in the past, in the future?
That's the million-dollar question. As China becomes more aggressive, as it moves towards its key year of 2049, the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Revolution, China wants to be the number one country. Therefore, it'll overshadow the United States one way or another, and Australia will have to make this choice between either one or the other. Now, politicians in Canberra who don't want the general public to get too worried about these things, who prefer you to talk about sport, the politicians in Canberra know that that is the big problem for Australia into the future. Can we remain allies of the United States and have trade, have China as our major trading partner? That is the big dilemma in Australian foreign policy. Politicians don't talk about this. They don't want to get you scared, but that is going to be the big issue as we perhaps move into the Chinese zone of influence.
Is having Joe Biden as the president now going to make it easier for Australia to have better relationships with both China and the United States? Less fractious relationships?
Yeah. I'm not sure, because I think that Biden will have learnt from Trump's genius at being able to get blue-collar workers in the Rust Belt, as it's called, where the industry has collapsed. Trump took Democrat voters. He mobilized those Democrat voters. Biden's problem is that if he goes too much down the free trade route, then he will end up creating the next Trump, because it will still cost American jobs. And so the next Republican candidate, could even be Donald Trump, will say, you are losing your jobs because of these free trade deals. The problem is President Clinton, when he started this move 30 years ago, had not thought through the full implications of what will happen when China joins the World Trade Organization. So this is the big dilemma that we've got for the United States. And Biden might well be just as awkward, not as unpleasant as Trump, but he'll be making the same point, that he wants to protect America's jobs rather than have the Chinese buy up all of America.
All right, Keith, it's always a delight to chat with you. As we've said before, we say it again, watch this space, eh?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Dr. Keith.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions.